Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
It seems that Jacob has met his match with Laban. Once the perpetrator of deceit, now Jacob is the victim and finds he is married, but not to the wife of his choosing. Part two of Cheryl's message titled, A Tale of Two Sisters.
Now the wedding night has come. And Laban, no doubt because it's a wedding feast, those could last for 7 days. He plies Jacob with wine and food and then sends him into a dark tent. Does any of this sound familiar? Then in that dark tent, Leah is dressed up like Rachel. So Leah goes into the dark tent pretending to be her younger sister, dressed like her younger sister in the darkness, just like Isaac, who had darkness because he couldn't see. And Jacob was sent into that tent pretending to be his older brother, dressed as his older brother, plying his father with wine and savory stew. So at this wedding, after all of the festivities, Jacob's in this dark tent. Leah comes in dressed like Rachel. Now, the wedding night ratified the marriage. You could have the ceremony, but it wasn't considered ratified until the wedding night. So Jacob awakes in the morning only to realize he has married the wrong daughter. Laban justified his deceit by cultural protocol. In his culture, the eldest must be given in marriage first. Isn't that interesting? It's her birthright to be married first. The fact that her father wants to pawn her off by deceit is also telling. The fact that there had been no suitor for Leah in 7 years is also telling. She is unwanted in her own father's household. She is unwanted by any of the men who live in Haran. And it's a culture that a spinster daughter was considered a deficit. So Laban encourages Jacob to fulfill his week for Leah. Now, they would have a week. Again, this is celebration. But a week was reserved to the bride and for the groom. We would call it a honeymoon. But in those days, it was to guarantee the conception of the first child, to give the wife time to conceive. And no doubt, this is what happens with Leah. Then after 7 days, Rachel is given to Jacob as a wife. And then Rachel has 7 days alone with Jacob to conceive. And Jacob must work another 7 years for Rachel. He works hard for Laban for 14 years. He has two wives who have plans for him. And every day when he comes in from a hard day's work, after watching the flocks of Laban and the cattle of Laban, he has a different sleeping partner. It might be Leah, might be Rachel, might be Bilhah or Zilpah. After 14 years of working for Laban, Jacob is ready to return to Canaan, but he has no wives, but he has only wives and sons, no riches. He has no way to support them, but he's ready just to gather up his whole clan and go back to Isaac. Laban bargains with him to work another 7 years. And Laban says this, I have learned by divination that God is blessing me because of you. Divination doesn't necessarily mean by means of magic. It could mean that I've divined or I've realized spiritually that I've had an epiphany that the reason I'm blessed is because of you. So Jacob negotiates with Laban. Jacob will work for livestock. Jacob agrees to take the least of Laban's flock, the speckled, the streaked, the spotted. Laban agrees to these terms, but before these terms can start, what does Laban do? He removes all the streaked, the spotted, and the speckled out from his livestock that Jacob will be taking care of. He gives it to his own sons, and he sends his sons 50 miles away so that Jacob will have to start from scratch. Because the idea is that streaked will give birth to streaked, striped will give birth to striped. But when you're starting again with solids, the odds go way down that there will be any streaked, spotted, or speckled. So this is, again, this is Laban being Laban, right? This is being deceitful. So Jacob starts from nothing. Now, not to be outdone or outwitted by his uncle Laban, Jacob thinks in his heart, two can play at this game. You won't find that in the scriptures. You just have to have a divine revelation that he's thinking that. But using a combination of folklore and science, Jacob mates the strongest animals together. He peels back the branches, exposing the white. Now, this is a wordplay in the Hebrew because the word Laban actually means white or whitey. So what Jacob does is he exposes the white of the branches to get the goats and the sheep and the cattle to have spots and speckles and streaks. Now, do you think that worked? No. Some think he's actually thinking it's working, that it's producing this. Others think he's reminding God that Laban cheated him by exposing the white at the mating troughs and saying, God, you know what Laban has done to me. Get even with him. What it is, we don't know. But it's interesting that during these 7 years, Jacob's wealth increases to unparalleled success. He's exceedingly prosperous with all the disadvantages. He prospers. He gets large flocks. He gets male and female servants. He gets camels. He gets donkeys. In 7 years, he goes from impoverished and having nothing but children and wives to having exceeding large flocks, male servants, camels, and donkeys. That's better than Amazon stock. That's crazy. Now, meanwhile, in Jacob's house, something else altogether is going on. Rachel, who has all the natural advantages, is barren. Let's talk about Rachel's advantages. We talked about her beauty, her perfect figure, but let's talk about her personality. She's got personality. She ran and told her father. She could make demands of Jacob. She's a woman with skills, useful. She's strong. She's brave. But also emotional strength. She's wanted. She's loved. She's esteemed and valued. Yet she has a 9 discontent. Her natural advantages were not substitutes for the barrenness that she carried. And this barrenness that she had caused her to be so jealous of her sister's fruitfulness. She becomes jealous of the one with all the disadvantages. She becomes competitive and she becomes angry. Rachel's natural advantages moved her to seek natural means to alleviate this barrenness. She had gotten so used to leaning into her natural advantages. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing a 90-year-old try to flirt. You know, you're just like, oh, don't do that. Or, you know, no offense, but those older women that are showing off things that should have been covered. You know, when I see some of these aging stars wearing outfits that, you know, bikinis, it's like, no. You know, put those away. You know, don't burn them even. It's It's just not a good look. But they're still leaning on the past, on what they used to be. I remember there was a lady, she was in her 80s, and when we were in Vista, and I was, I think, 24, 25 at the time, and she came to church with all these pictures of her in a bikini when she was in her, like, 40s, and she says, "I have something to show you. You think your wife is so good looking. Take a look at these." And Brian's like, "Maybe not." He saw the first one and said, "Maybe not. I think these would be really good to show your husband." "Oh, he's seen them, but I just want to show you. Your wife's got nothing compared to what I have." And he was like, "Okay." I think there was a little dementia there, obviously. But, you know, to lean into, there are people I have seen that lean into those natural advantages and get used to using natural advantages because they've always had them. It's very, very dangerous. And what we see in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 30 is that she went to Jacob. She blamed Jacob for her problems. She says, "Give me children or else I die. It's your fault. I'm blaming you. I've got all the natural advantages. This should not be happening to me. It's got to be your fault." But Jacob says, "Your problem's with God. Seek God. Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? You need to go to God." Then she comes up with a plan, not unlike Sarah's, to acquire children through surrogates. This was very common in the Eastern culture, these surrogate pregnancies with the maids. I mean, we look at it and go, "Whoa!" And that's because we're Westerners. But in the Eastern culture, having children was so important. So important, and especially she wants her children to be in the lineage, to be under the promises of Abraham. She wants a part in that. So she gives her maid Bilhah to Jacob as a surrogate mother. But when Bilhah gives birth to two sons, Rachel names these sons Dan and Naphtali. And these names, she justifies these names. Dan means judge, but it reflects Rachel's belief that she was in the right against her sister. My sister, this is right. And both of the names have to do with her sister. She's measuring herself by her sister, not by God, but by her sister. Naphtali means, she justifies it as, "I have wrestled with my sister and won." Now, Rachel then hears that Reuben, Leah's son, has found mandrakes in a field, and Rachel bargains a night with Jacob for them. Now, mandrakes, I'm going to read you this. Mandragora officinarum is a stemless perennial root in the potato family, because you want to know this, found growing in stony ground. It resembles the human figure and has a narcotic and purgative properties, which explain its medicinal use. Its shape and pungent fragrance may be the origin of its use in fertility rites and as an aphrodisiac. It has dark green wrinkled leaves. This is so you can recognize it if you see it in your yard. From which rise a violet bell-shaped flower. So we're on the lookout. Its fruit is a yellowish berry, approximately the size of a small tomato, which can be consumed, just in case you're hungry, you want something extra for your salad. The mandrake is native to the Mediterranean region, but not common in Mesopotamia. Now you know. Now you know. Now you can go home. You know. Rachel believes that if she has this fruit, this is the cause of the barrenness. First, Jacob's the cause. Then she tries the surrogates. Now if she has this aphrodisiac, this will make all the difference. This is the remedy. This is the solution for her barrenness. And it doesn't work. Instead, what happens? Leah gets a night with Jacob, and she gets pregnant, and she conceives three more times. Finally, after Leah has three more children, so it's 7-0. Rachel, we're told that God remembered or was mindful of Rachel. Interestingly enough, Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel were all described in the Bible as beautiful, and yet all three women were described as barren. God used Sarah's barrenness to bring out a covenant child, to arrest Abraham and Sarah's attention on the miraculous, on the singularity of this son, of this covenant son. God used Rebecca's barrenness to get Isaac praying and Rebecca to seek him concerning her pregnancy and the sons she would give birth to. But Rachel's barrenness did not result in any special revelation from God of a covenant son or a special work. Rachel has what we might call a user relationship with God. She pleads for God for a child. There are some people who this is what their relationship with God is like. It's, God, give me what I want. God, give me what I need, rather than, God, give me you. When Rachel has a son, she names this son Joseph, saying, God will give me another. The name Joseph, don't get upset if you named your son Joseph or if you named your daughter Rachel. This is unpopular with people of those names, this Bible study. Joseph means, I want another one, or not enough, insufficient, discontent. Later, we'll read next week in Genesis 31:34, where Rachel steals her father's idols and lies about it, jeopardizing Jacob, trying to get some inheritance from her father by stealing. Idols were not only images to other gods, idolatry, but they also represented land rights, and they were usually made of silver or gold as to have value. You see, Rachel is still seeking natural advantages. When Rachel gives birth to a second son, this will be in Genesis 35, she names him Benoni, or son of my sorrow, or the son that killed me, the son that cursed me. Such a name would be a curse on the child and a constant reminder that he had caused his mother's death. She's, because of her own self-centeredness, in her death, she's bringing a curse to her son. Jacob intervenes, and this is the only child he names. And he changes the name from Benoni to Benjamin, strength of my right hand. Now, Leah has all the disadvantages. She's weak-eyed, whatever that means to you. She's pawned off by her father. She is married by pretending to be someone else. She is unloved. She's unwanted. Her sister is jealous of her, and she's in an emotionally unhealthy atmosphere. Yet, the names of Leah's children reveal much about what was going on in her heart and life. The name Reuben, seen, is justified as God has seen my affliction. God knows what I'm going through. The name Reuben is hearing, or God has heard my prayers. These names are reminiscent of what Hagar realized. Hagar, who had all the disadvantages. She was the bondservant. She was taken advantage of. Sarah treated her cruelly. But when she ran away, God spoke to her, told her she would give birth to a son, Ishmael. And she named the well where God met her Elroy, or you are the God that sees, Genesis 16:42, and she named her son Ishmael, or God hears. These are the very attributes that Leah acknowledges. The Lord surely looked on my affliction. The Lord has heard that I am unloved. Her third son is named Attached, Levi, speaking of a hope that will not be fulfilled. Her fourth son is named Judah, or Praise. At this time in her life, she stops conceiving, which could mean that Jacob is not coming into her anymore now that he's got Bilhah and Rachel. He's a little busy. Leah then offers her maid Zilpah to Jacob. In offering their maid, that in the Eastern culture, this was something beneficent. Remember, Sarah did it for Abraham, that Abraham might have a covenant son. They think they're doing something that honors their husband because their goal is to give their husband as many sons as possible. We would slap our husband silly if they tried this. It's like you want to just put over this, don't try this at home or anyplace else. Zilpah, like Bilhah, these are names we should all remember, has two sons that Leah names Gad, or a troop comes. It means strength or blessing. Asher means blessed or happy. They have nothing to do with Rachel. They're not, take this Rachel, look at this Rachel. These only have to do with Leah's relationship to God. Then after the mandrake incident, it is Leah, not Rachel, who conceives. Now she bears two more sons and a daughter, Issachar. God has given me my hire, or God has rewarded me. God has blessed me. Zebulun, God has endowed me with the good endowment. And then Dinah, God has been right in his judgment, or God has been good. Though Leah is the disadvantaged, she turned her attention to God. You see, disadvantages, when given to God, can become advantages because we realize, one, that this world has nothing to offer us, that we will not find our value in this world. I don't think there's anything better than that. I think that happened to me sometime in my 50s. And in my 50s, it was like, wow, my daughters get all the attention now. You know, people rush to bag their groceries. And they're like, you can do it yourself. I hope you brought your own bags. But it has a way of turning our attention heavenward to the one who will be our guide even into our old age, who loves us just as much as he loved us when we were young and vibrant, that we are more important than sparrows, Matthew 10, 29 through 31, that we, no matter what our age, no matter what we look like, no matter what our physical shape, that we have all been redeemed by the precious blood of Jesus, the greatest, most valuable commodity of all time, all place, all people, and in the entire world, was shed for each of us. 1 Peter 1, 18 and 19. Leah's value came from God's attention to her and on her. Jeremiah 9, 23 through 24 says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man glory in his might, nor let the rich man glory in his riches, but let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me, the Lord, that I am the Lord who exercises loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these I delight. The Lord said, here's your value.
Deficit and need should always drive us to God. Instead of trusting God, Rachel's desire for children drove her to scheme, plan, and take matters into her own hands. Trusting God when nothing seems to be happening is difficult. However, it is harder to live with the consequences of taking matters into our own hands. Rachel finally prayed, and God, in his timing, gave her a son of her own. God always remembers, even though we may think he forgets.
We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll conclude our look at the tale of two sisters as we continue our series, Our Great Creator, in the book of Genesis with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.